we received a question from a listener about Latinx voters in Wisconsin. We asked her to join us for a few minutes to talk more about what she's curious about in our Why Wisconsin project. Eloisa Gomez is with us from Milwaukee. Eloisa, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Robin. I just want to say thanks so much to WPR for following up on my question.
Sure. That's why we do this Why Wisconsin thing. I'm glad you asked your question. Eloisa, before we get to your question, I understand you do some work around voting with the Latinx community in the Milwaukee area. What kind of things do you do?
Oh, well, yes. Through my work with the League of Women Voters of Milwaukee County, we're focusing in on the south side of Milwaukee, in which we're providing a lot of bilingual literature and making it culturally appropriate to really attract attention and to be able to provide nonpartisan information so people make good decisions about when they vote.
What are some of the key issues or maybe even obstacles facing the voters you're working with in the community?
Well, one of the big obstacles especially for our Spanish-speaking portion of our Latino community is just access to the information in Spanish. We just have such a long ways to go in providing information in Spanish. So through the League of Women Voters, we've been working to make that available. In fact, now we're going to have all the candidate information that's put on by the League of Women Voters, you know, the questions that they, standard questions they ask candidates, is now available in Spanish completely. So we're very excited about that. But that's just one matter. I just think we're often thinking of the Latino voters at the time of the elections, when it really has to be an ongoing kind of effort.
All right. Now set us up for a conversation. What, Eloisa, is your Wisconsin question?
Okay, thank you. So here's my question. The 2020 election are a historic milestone for Latinx voters in the U.S. At 13.3%, the Latino population has the largest share of the electorate among minority voting population. How is this changing demographic, changing electoral politics now and in the future? More specifically, how does this trend translate to the level of the city of Milwaukee, which has the largest concentration of Latinos in the state of Wisconsin?
All right, Eloisa, thank you so much for coming on the air to share your question. I appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate you all so much. Thank you.
We'll turn now to two guests to help us answer that question. We've got Phil Chen, assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. Phil, welcome back to Central Time.
Happy to be here, Rob.
And Jaime Alvarado is a state board secretary for the League of United Latin American Citizens, Wisconsin. Jaime, thanks a lot for joining us.
Pleasure being here. Thank you.
Let's start with you, Jaime. Can you tell us a little bit about the role you at this group, LULAC, see Latinx voters playing in Milwaukee and around Wisconsin?
Well, yeah, I've been a LULAC member for over 10 years. And LULAC, by the way, is a League of United Latin American Citizens. We're an advocacy group similar to the NAACP for Latinos. We advocate for housing, education, civil rights, and a big part is registering voters. And so we've been registering voters for the past 8 years in the Milwaukee area, specifically at the DMV. In the near south side, which is the Latino neighborhood. And that's the biggest obstacle I see is registering our community and learning about the the importance of voting, but also when are the election dates and the candidates. Give you an inform who the candidates are. And the League of Women Voters, by the way, has a really great website where you can learn in a nonpartisan way what their issues are. And that's what we want, is to educate our community and to be well-informed and to go out and vote.
And Jaime, getting to Eloisa's question, the first part of it, she says that this is a milestone moment this year for Latinx voters and their percentage of the electorate and their possible sway on the elections. Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah. Nationwide, 1 million Latinos are turning 18 and eligible to vote. In the city of Milwaukee, 25% of our students at MPS are Latinos. And the median age of all Latinos in the U.S. is 19, so 35 million U.S.-born Latinos. So it's a huge potential. The next two decades, Latinos will be a very important part of making decisions on who are elected officials nationwide. And Milwaukee is no exception.
And Phil, let's turn to you now. Do we see notable voting patterns or voting behaviors from this the Latinx community, the people here in Wisconsin, that we can start your part of the conversation off with?
So I think the big thing to remember here is that when we're talking about the Latinx community and Latinx voters, we also have to consider other competing identities or intersecting identities. And one of the big things is age, right? We've heard both Jaime and Eloisa speak about age and Latinx voters, you know, turning 18. Well, the problem is that we know that young people vote at significantly lower rates than older people. And so the effort going in from LULAC around registration and the League of Women Voters for Spanish language, that's all a really important piece of getting people engaged with the process. But it's also about turning out those younger voters. And that's always been a challenge for both political parties. And so that's what I think we're going to be looking for, is how can the candidates turn out those younger Latinx voters?
Another complicating factor here is Latinx or Latino, whichever phrase we use, covers a lot of diversity. That could mean a Puerto Rican, or it could mean Cuban American. It could mean, you know, first generation immigrants. It could be families that have been in, say, New Mexico since the 1600s. There are a lot of different subgroups here, Phil, that may not all feel the same way about the different issues.
Absolutely. And I think there's a tendency in sort of the general public to think of Latinx or Latino voters as sort of a homogenous group. But the evidence we have suggests that that's not the case, that we really do need to think about Latinx voters the way we think about voters in general. They have issues they care about. Yes, immigration does tend to be somewhat of a wedge issue, but it does not always, in fact, it's not usually the most important issue among Latinx voters. And like you said, a Latino voter in New Mexico who's a longtime citizen, whose family has lived in New Mexico for years, is different than a naturalized citizen in California versus a citizen born in Milwaukee. And so there are regional differences, the same way that there are regional and class-based and education-based differences among white voters. We talk about those different influences on white voters all the time, and yet the general public tends to group Latinx voters and African-American voters and minority voters in general as these sort of homogenous groups, when in fact that's not really what we see as far as support. One of the sort of classic examples is Cuban-American voters in Florida tend to be significantly more conservative than other Latinx voters. And so when you talk about the sort of voter registration patterns and voting patterns of Latinx voters in Florida, you see a skew. And a large part of that is historical legacies of the Republican Party connected to Cuba that have driven Cuban Americans to be a little bit more Republican or a little more conservative than other Latinx subgroups.
And Jaime, with all that in mind, is it tough for you as an organization to find, I guess, common ground, common principles that might unite these different communities, these different age groups and so on that Phil was just talking about?
Yeah, I'm looking at some surveys show that the economy is a huge part, jobs. And incidentally, as far as Cubans, the newer generation are not as conservative, mm-hmm. and exactly. In Florida and around. So they're very, very in tune on what's happening with COVID now and the government and the spread of misinformation and hate. And so I think that's something that many are looking at, especially the youth, Black Lives Matter, things like that, are galvanizing.
Right now, we're picking up the conversation about how Latinx voters in Wisconsin might be changing electoral politics in the state and nationally. Comes from a WPR listener question as part of our Why Wisconsin project. We've got political science professor Phil Chen from Beloit College with us and Jaime Alvarado, state board secretary for LULAC Wisconsin, the Latin American Civil Rights Organization. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about you and your community? Are you a Latinx resident of Wisconsin? What are some issues that matter to you as a voter? For anyone out there, do you have questions about the changing demographics of Wisconsin and the nation and how it all plays out politically? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Jaime, let's get into part of Eloise's question now about Milwaukee in particular. Can you talk about the changing demographics there and what that looks like for local politics there?
Yeah, like I mentioned, 25% of MPS students are Latino, and the population is young. So League of Women Voters and LULAC are heavily into high schools and registering voters and the youth. And one thing that we're following up is with texting and messaging. And I think that's going to make the difference. I think it's going to make a bigger turnout, giving them information on who the candidates are, nonpartisan information that the League Women Voters have. And other sources, I think, is important to be informed. So I think that's going to make a difference on many, many campaigns, elections.
And Phil, the proportion of the population we're talking about, the U.S. population, about 16-ish%, depending on how you slice it, but they're not evenly distributed around the country. Can you talk about how Latinx voters, in certain states, in certain congressional districts, in certain electoral vote tallying areas might be a swing factor?
Yeah, absolutely. So Pew Research just earlier this year came out with a study that showed, over basically 60-ish% of the what we might think of naturalized citizens, or what we know of as naturalized citizens, live in five states. And this isn't just Latinos or Latinx immigrants. This is naturalized citizens, but they live in California, New York, Florida, Texas, and New Jersey. And so this, I think, is reproduced in some way in what we see around other immigrant voting blocks, as well as around the Latinx voting block, right? That they're, like you said, it's not a group of voters that are randomly distributed. And so some of those states, California, New York, New Jersey, not really going to be in play. Texas, despite lots of talk, probably going to go Republican. But Florida is absolutely a swing state and is in play in the 2020 election. But like you said, there's also issues around congressional representation. And what we know is that there's been historical gerrymandering drawn to reduce the influence of minority communities in and to pack minorities into congressional districts. And we also know that immigrant status, as well as racial minority status, tends to correlate in this country with lower levels of mobility, of income, of education. Yes, some of that's changing, but that also leads to different kinds of geographic constraints. And so there's some real thorny issues that need to be overcome, both in the way that districts are drawn, as well as the way that our social safety net is developed in order to see a more sort of, I don't want to say random distribution, but a broader distribution of minority voters across the country that isn't so packed into certain states or certain congressional districts.
Jaime, given the potential influence of Latinx voters in key districts, do you see politicians and parties making an effort to reach out?
Most definitely. And I'd like to add Arizona, Nevada, Illinois, a lot of those congressional districts are going to be changed with the Latino vote. all over the country for the most part in metropolitans. And they're also going into the suburbs. A lot of Latinos are in the suburbs as well. So, but yeah, I think the campaigns are definitely going to be, both Republican and Democratic campaigns are going to try and court the very important Latino vote.
We are talking to Jaime Alvarado, State Board Secretary for the League of United Latin American Citizens, Wisconsin, and Phil Chen, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Beloit College. They are helping answer a Wisconsin question from one of our listeners, Eloisa Gomez, about the role of Latinx voters around the country here in Wisconsin and at the local level. You can always share questions with our Wisconsin project, by the way, at WPR.org. Phil, politically, I think there's been an assumption sometimes from Democrats that as Latinx populations go up in key areas, that's inherently good news for Democrats. You mentioned a state like Texas, where it seems like Democrats in particular have been holding their breath for this to happen, that change to happen for some time. It's not necessarily something they can bank on, right?
Right. I mean, so what we do know is that Latinx voters do tend to identify as more Democratic than white voters. So in some sense, yes, a larger voting block that is made up of more Latinx voters than in the previous year should tend mathematically to be a little bit more Democratic. But states like Texas are tricky. Texas has not gone Democratic the way that many people have predicted. It may be moving that way in the sense that Texas tends to be getting a little bit more competitive, but we haven't really seen statewide elections go to the Democrats too much in Texas. That's not to say that the sort of Latinx community might not become a really solid Democratic voting bloc. They're already, again, not to paint with too broad a brush, but the Latinx community voters are still at this point largely Democratic, but not nearly to the extent that we see, for instance, with African-American voters, where we see consistently 80 to 90% of African-American voters voting for the Democratic presidential candidate. It's more along the lines of 60, 65% of Latinx voters. Doesn't mean that the nature of party coalitions won't change over time. In fact, it's likely that that will change, but it's not, there isn't sort of the same historical legacy around, say, the Civil Rights Act in the 1960s, or just the way the Democratic Party has positioned itself with African-American voters. We don't have quite the same history with Latinx voters that the Democrats can necessarily count on this as a consistent voting bloc without much more effort to reach out to these communities, to register them, to stay engaged on a variety of issues that are important to them throughout the years, not just when it comes time for an election.
Jaime, I wanted to ask you about something that Phil had mentioned earlier, concerns of gerrymandering, drawing district lines, especially in ways that limit the voting impact of minority communities. Is that something you're concerned about here in Wisconsin, in particular, as we get ready to draw new district lines after the 2020 census?
Yeah. I was part of the redistricting in the Milwaukee, the city of Milwaukee, and there again, it was also packed and cracked. And the legislative maps are the same. So, unfortunately, it's a partisan mapping now, gerrymandering type of system. So until we get independent type of system where maps are drawn, it will make a difference. You look at the statistics where the one party gets the majority of the votes, but they got a lot less seats. And that's a prime example of the broken system we have in Wisconsin.
And Phil, bringing it back around to Eloise's question that we started with, she also talks about the future. I won't ask you to predict the future, but can you talk about the potential for rising influence of Latinx voters, not just in 2020, but in the years to come?
Absolutely. And I think cycling back to a lot of what both Jaime and Eloisa have said, the way at least that I think we should think about the rising influence of Latinx voters is through the lens of age as well. Young people. the increased influence of younger people, this youngest generation, which is the most diverse generation in U.S. history. That's where the power will come from. That's not to say that older Latinx voters don't also have power. But as we think about the change in electoral coalitions, the change in how elections work in this country, we should be thinking about the power of that youngest generation and the issues they care about. And when we look at those issues, we see those issues are things like education, are things like the economy, having jobs available to young people, being able, the environment is a major issue. These are issues that are cutting across racial, demographic lines in a way that really, I think, will drive home that point and that change that that Eloisa is referring to in her question.
We'll leave it there for now. Phil, thanks for joining us today.
Of course, happy to be here.
And Jaime, thanks a lot for being with us.
Pleasure. My pleasure.
We've been talking to Jaime Alvarado, State Board Secretary for the group LULAC Wisconsin, the League of United Latin American Citizens, and Phil Chen, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Beloit College. We talked to them about Latinx voters in Wisconsin. This conversation inspired by a question from listener Eloisa Gomez, who we talked to at the beginning of the conversation as part of the Why Wisconsin Project. Submit your question, and we might take a stab at answering it in the future. Go to WPR.org/Wisconsin. That's like WHY Wisconsin.